Welcome to the monthly three-edge view from the edge for June 2026. I'm Fritz Volt, Chief Investment Strategist here at 3Edge, and joining me here, as he does every month, is Eric Biegeleisen, the Director of Investment Research and Deputy Chief Investment Officer here at 3Edge Asset Management. And as we do each month, Eric will provide our most recent outlook for the global capital markets based on our proprietary 3Edge research model. And we'll focus in on those areas which we believe deserve a bit of more of a deeper dive and special attention. So we have a lot to cover today, so let's get started. And to begin, Eric will review our 3Edge asset class matrix, which provides, in one chart, a view into our model research across the major asset class groups that make up the first level of our investment universe. And we'll see, what has changed since the prior month. So Eric, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Fritz. It certainly felt like a volatile month here with news headlines suggesting the war is over or we'll have an extended ceasefire only to see more attacks. That said, we generally saw some great gains from equities last month with, market participants just clearly shrugging off these risks, right? And so you had Japanese stocks up over 4% last month, U.S. equities up over 5%, emerging market stocks up over 6%, even Europe, which has been a bit of a laggard in terms of growth, up almost 3% last month. So, participants clearly shrugging things off. That said, commodities, bonds, gold all had flat or negative returns last month, right? And so even with this market performance that we've seen, the risk of a prolonged or a worsening conflict here or elsewhere, or in the Middle East, remains. And so balancing this is challenging. And therefore, as we can see in our asset class matrix, we haven't changed anything. Our model research is indicating the potential for continued breakout to new highs for some equities, but also the risk of correction too. So, you balance these and it largely leaves us where we are.
Excellent. All right. So as you mentioned, U.S. equities had, pretty good month in June. And the Middle East conflict is overshadowed by investor enthusiasm for all things AI, which I'm sure you'll touch on as we anticipate the first of the major tech AI IPOs coming with SpaceX, which I think is later this month, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a lot going on this month with the SpaceX IPO, planned IPOs potentially upcoming as well for Anthropic and OpenAI as well. You also have this month the new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh, presiding over his first FOMC meeting in the middle of the month. So there's a lot going on. These have the potential to set the tone here near term for the broader market, depending on what happens and what's said, right? Overall, our slightly favorable outlook for U.S. equities remains. Despite Secretary Rubio declaring that the fighting is over while missiles are flying overhead, you certainly have the threat of an escalating conflict in the Middle East. And as we've said for some time now, you also have excessive overvaluation here in the U.S. And so just a little side note on that, while we typically speak about the lofty price to sales ratio for U.S. equities as our key metric for U.S. equity valuation, I just want to throw out this chart here showing several other measures. This box mm-hmm. here, this box and whisker plot here does show a range of valuations for a variety of metrics going back to 1900. And you can see the diamond here indicates the latest values. And you can see all of them are at least one, if not several, standard deviations above their historical averages. So I just want to provide a little context there that we're not crazy people. There are a lot of metrics that support this overvaluation. That said, AI-focused firms continue to deliver strong earnings and a solid outlook, all while we are seeing an environment of positive investor psychology and tightening credit spreads. There is a rationale to be positive on U.S. equities still. And as we've said, overvalued markets can get more overvalued. This next chart, though, illustrates the incredible value creation in such a short period of time, particularly with focused here on, in this chart, on Anthropic and OpenAI since their first public product launch. And that's pretty remarkable when you compare it against, as it does in this chart, TikTok's ByteDance or Uber, which at the time were considered to have incredible valuation growth. So these mega IPOs can potentially accelerate growth we've seen or potentially lead to a great unwind too, depending on how the market takes it. And so, as we've mentioned, we'll closely be watching Fed Chair Warsh's first meeting later this month and any actions taken or messages he delivers for clues as it pertains to U.S. equities and our outlook.
All right, great. Thanks. So, as was the case in both April and May, the model continues to find Japanese equities to be attractive, and Japanese equities are outperforming the S&P 500 index thus far. So what is our model telling us now as we head into the month of June for Japanese equities?
Yeah, well, Japan has been negatively impacted by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. You know, investors in Japanese equities so far have shrugged off the potential for this, the longer term implications of the conflict, much like, you know, investors here in the U.S. as well. You know, there just seems to be a resumption of that excitement surrounding the new prime minister's pro-growth plans for the country. And there are several Japanese companies that serve this key role in the global AI supply chain. You know, we've also seen the Japanese government drawing a line in the sand regarding supporting their currency, the yen, as it's intervened now several times this year alone at that 160 yen to dollar level. So we've discussed this previously, but this is a risk that an unwinding of the yen carry trade does remain this risk for global markets. And we need to continue to monitor that, if we see any excessive strengthening taking place. All of that said, taken together, the outlook does remain positive here in the near term.
All right. Excellent. So let's move on to the emerging markets, emerging market equities, including China. And this is kind of interesting so far this year because broad-based emerging market like ETFs, which have a variety of different EM countries in them, they've done quite well this year, while at the same time, China has really struggled. So what is the model telling us at this point in time?
Yeah, a bit divergent this year between emerging market equities broadly and China specifically. You know, as the EM indexes have really benefited from exposures, particularly to South Korea and Taiwan, outweighing the muted China performance. In May alone, just the month of May, Taiwan equities were up almost 15%. And Korean equities were up almost 30%. Again, heavy AI semiconductor plays there, but really driving the broader EM indices higher. Our outlook for China emerging market equities maintains that mixed or neutral outlook still. You know, China has largely stayed on the sidelines during the U.S.-Iranian conflict, but it is feeling the pain of the Straits closure like everyone. We also saw that highly anticipated Trump-Xi, the U.S.-China summit, and that came and went without much substance, you know, leaving the status quo on the table. So, you know, China equities are showing the potential for a rebound to the upside, but it isn't without its risks. As we know, on the other side of the coin, oversold markets can get even more oversold before they rebound. So something we'll keep an eye on.
All right, excellent. So now we'll shift our attention to the bond market, interest rates, and the U.S. Treasury market. And, you know, obviously, certainly here in the U.S., there's a great deal of attention being paid to, the rise in the price of gasoline and food and anything that seems to have to make its way through the Strait of Hormuz. And so there's a lot of uncertainty. We have seen longer rates spike up here. But what is the model indicating for the interest rate environment and the Treasury market?
Yeah. So, you know, near-term inflation expectations have fallen to about 2.7%, which is only slightly above where this one-year break-even inflation rate stood at the start of the year. So market participants just across the board do not seem concerned about the effects of the sharp spike in energy prices, you know, as it relates to the threat of rising or increased inflation levels, despite the latest, you know, headline CPI number climbing to 3.8%. You know, the Fed remains in this tough position with regard to its dual mandate of full employment and price stability. Fed Chair Warsh's preferred inflation measure, the trimmed mean CPI, shows that inflation is well behaved at 2.3%. Take a look at the variety of inflation measures here on this chart from Bloomberg, and we see that Warsh's measure is the lowest and most well behaved. You know, kind of like a, you know, what inflation? If a rate cut is in the cards, presumably, he'll be pointing to this measure as the rationale for why inflation isn't an issue. You know, we've also witnessed a dramatic rise in the longer dated treasury yields, both at the 10 and 30 year yields, which you alluded to. And that's likely to hurt households, corporations, and potentially the most pivotal is the government, as the cost of servicing this ever-increasing debt burden grows. Take a look at this chart here of the government's U.S. interest burden as a percent of all of the federal outlays. You can see this going back to the 1960s. It is high and climbing. It's not yet even at the peak, if you can believe it, which was in 1996. So perhaps there's more room to run here. Time will tell. You know, and as a reminder about thinking about bonds for diversification from equities, I'd like to show this other chart here that shows the days of bonds performing well when equities suffer drawdowns. That seems to be behind us now, right? The light green here showcases the gains that bonds had during the dark green equity sell-offs. And that all seems to have stopped since the bond market reached its peak in 2020. And they've either, since then, have either provided no return during equity market sell-offs or have actually declined alongside equities, much like 2022, which folks will remember. So all of that taken together, you know, we do continue to favor short-term, high-quality issues.
Right. And that's worked for us so far. So that's great. Let's turn our attention then to real assets. That includes gold and commodities. And why don't we begin with gold?
Yeah, we maintain that longer-term favorable outlook for gold, which we've noted for some time. You know, that's based on declining real, that is inflation-adjusted treasury yields, accelerating U.S. debt, the rising interest burden that we just talked about to service this debt, and steps the Treasury and or the Fed may take to inflate their way out of this debt burden. The cost of the war only exacerbates this debt problem. So, you know, beyond this, countries, whether formerly friend or foe, continue to diversify away from U.S. dollar and dollar-based assets. Look at this chart here. You can see, you know, that shows the composition of global official reserves, showing how gold in orange at the top has overtaken U.S. treasuries, shown in the darker blue at the bottom as a percent. You know, this is the narrative of folks rotating out of U.S. treasuries and into gold, and it really is accelerating, and it shows up, you know, right here in the data. So taking this together, you know, this is likely result in longer term dollar weakness that should benefit gold. Nearer term, gold may be in a consolidation period following its, you know, really meteoric rise that we saw, you know, since 2022, particularly in January of this year as well. Clear direction by the government on the war, as well as the direction of interest rate policy by Warsh and the Federal Reserve Committee, may help give better signals nearer term on the impact of gold.
Right. I mean, I can imagine gold might take a break after being up 64% last year, you know, just last year. Let's move on to the commodities. And yeah, I mean, as we've mentioned, you know, since the outbreak of the war, we've seen the increase in the price of oil, other commodities, anything that has to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, not surprisingly, a broad-based basket of commodities, which again, we had mentioned, are one of the top performing asset classes year to date. So as the war drags on, what is the model telling us about the outlook for commodities?
Yeah, well, like gold, you know, weakening demand for U.S. dollars may also benefit commodities more broadly. Broad-based commodity exposures that contain energy and agriculturally focused commodities, they may continue to benefit, as you suggested, while the Strait is, you know, impassable. So the outlook remains overall positive. You know, we've seen little to no progress in negotiations, despite headlines occasionally suggesting otherwise. And while the physical attacks have slowed somewhat, we are seeing some ships make safe passage through the Strait. But, you know, risks of escalation remain, as a deal that allows both sides to claim victory just may not be possible. And even if a deal is struck, it is unlikely to lead to a recovery in pre-conflict energy prices anytime soon for a couple of reasons. One, it's not likely that supplies will come online quickly. So firstly, secondly, once oil and gas energy is more available, countries are likely to stockpile in the near term, A, to replenish reserves, but also to prepare for the next closure. So this may help keep a floor on how far down prices can go for commodities here, at least in the near term.
Yeah, and I think that this war has changed the dynamic where now the threat of Iran closing off the Strait could actually, impact the risk, increasing the price just based on that risk, which is not going to go away, even if they have a negotiated peace anyway. Eric, thank you. Appreciate the update. And just to summarize, we'll take one more look at the asset class matrix for June. And as Eric indicated, there were no changes in terms of the model research. At least there were no changes significant enough to move a major asset class one way or the other. But as Eric has mentioned throughout this video, there's no lack of uncertainty out there in the world and the capital markets. And so, as always, we will remain vigilant and prepared to make portfolio adjustments as needed. And so with that, we will call it a wrap. That will do it for this month's edition of the Three Edge View from the Edge. If you'd like a hard copy of this View from the Edge newsletter in print, you'll find that on our website at 3edgeam.com. Also, our entire library of videos always available on our 3 Edge YouTube channel. If you enjoy watching these videos and would be so kind to subscribe, we would appreciate that. So for now, on behalf of Eric and everyone here at 3 Edge, thanks for listening. This commentary is intended for information purposes only and does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy securities. The opinions expressed in View from the Edge are those of Mr. Foltz and Mr. Beagleisen and are subject to change without notice in reaction to shifting market conditions. This commentary is not intended to provide personal investment advice and does not take into account the unique investment objectives and financial situation of the listener. Investors should only seek investment advice from their financial advisor. The observations include information from sources that 3 Edge believes to be reliable, but the accuracy of such information cannot be guaranteed. Investments, including common stocks, fixed income, commodities, and ETFs, all involve a risk of loss that investors should be prepared to bear.